You know, for a while there, I wasn't sure the sun was going to rise again for our agents. It was looking quite bleak, and in the end, a choice was made. A difficult choice. This story hinges on difficult choices, and the game is not over. We aren't out of the woods yet. Welcome to the epilogue for Static. Next week we'll have home scenes, and then a roundtable discussion the week after that, but then we're launching right into our next story. If you love this show, it would mean a lot to us if you'd take some time to rate and review it wherever you listen, and pass it on to your friends. We love what we do, and we want it to grow, and the only way we can do that is with your help. Thank you so much for listening along with us on this wild ride. Please enjoy the Static epilogue, Curtain Call.
They should mostly clean, but
they're coming after me. I don't know who they are.
But you gotta take this along.
The implications.
Hey, Dr. G, I know we don't usually meet in the evenings, but there's something going on out here that you, Dr. D?
Oh, hello!
Who the hell are you?
It is I, Dr. Friend. Jacob, this is the most unexpected surprise. A most unexpected surprise indeed. You always turn me down in group when I invite you to come in and see me for a private session, and yet, here you are.
What the fuck are you talking about?
Oh, no, not again. It seems these new meds we're giving you are having quite the opposite effect on your problem with losing time. So much lost time. So very much. It makes me so sad for you.
Oh, what the hell is wrong with this office?
Look, how many walls do you see?
More than four?
Wait, close your eyes. Breathe in, breathe out. Soon your world will be fresh and clean and right again.
Oh, where's Dr. Dallin?
Let's not talk about other doctors right now. You know how jealous that makes me. It really puts a strain on our special doctor-patient relationship. Why don't we try focusing on your perception of reality? Would you like to tell me a story?
I ain't gonna tell you no goddamn story.
Oh, we're never gonna make progress if you don't participate in therapy, Jacob. You're never going to get better unless you put in the effort.
What the hell is going on?
Let's see now. We'll start simple. Jacob, do you enjoy the activities of your own choosing?
What the hell is that supposed to mean?
Noted. Describe for me a time when you were absolutely certain that the world wasn't real.
Wait, like you mean like right now? Like right now, none of this shit is real. You're not real. This office ain't real. It's all wrong.
I see. What do you think the world felt like before you were born?
What kind of question is that?
Still struggling with denial. It's okay. Let's try a simpler question. Have you found the yellow sign?
You know what? Well, this is a dream. I'm just dreaming you up. You're the side effect of some bad meds and sleeping pills or bland facility food. You're just a demon from my unconscious mind pulling out ancient memories and taunting me with them. I'm gonna wake up in a pool of sweat soon, and I'll just be laughing at myself for ever believing any of this shit was ever real.
Jacob, can you paint it for me? Can you paint it for me just like you painted Carcosa?
I'm not really that good at painting.
I see. Do you often think of death, sickness, pain, and sorrow?
Not nearly enough.
How long do you think it will be until the end of the world?
I ain't got that much time left, imaginary doctor friend. And whatever time I got, I ain't gonna spend it looking too far ahead. I'm gonna keep looking straight at my own feet, my own footsteps. Just keep marching towards the edge of that cliff.
Jacob, I'm your friend.
Yeah, of course you are.
Have you heard that the last king has come?
No.
Have you, Jacob, have you heard that the last king is come?
What the hell?
It's time, my dearest friend. The time is upon us. It's here. The wait is over. Have you received an invitation?
They tell me all your stories, all the little worries you cry. They tell me what the world needs, what to say, who to please, where my loyalties should lie. They tell me what you're building, far too many stories high, stories high. And tell me where will we be when it comes down from the sky, all scattered and far wide. And the rising tide.
Sunday nights going into Monday morning, it's an all-nighter where things sort of run together. What you remember from Sunday night, late evening, is turning over your things, your belongings, your equipment, your gear, and anything that might possibly be contaminated to this shadow team. They just ask you to leave it in the van. Everything, they say, leave it in the van. And so things are left. And then, of course, they ask, they speak to Dorothy about if there's anything else we need to know about. And Dorothy, you get them, you tell them, but they already know where your motel rooms are. That's not a surprise to them. They're aware of that. And when you mention them, they'll say, we're going to check that anyway.
Cool.
Everything is left in the van. They ask the three of you to go into their van. And one of them drives while the rest of you are passengers. The other two stay with your old van, and you, as you pull away from this secluded swamp road in the middle of nowhere, you just see your old van. Damage, you know, the exterior, the roof, the sides, the damage is evident, and those two agents loading it up, preparing it, you leave them behind. The one fellow who drives you does not say anything unless he absolutely has to. He's really quiet. Professional, but quiet. He is, looks like, he's in his early 40s. A taller fellow, about 6'2", 195, so he's strong, but more thin, more wiry. He's got blonde hair and a blonde mustache, and it's cut very much, very professionally. Not so high and tight, but it does have a very military look to him. He's got basically green eyes, and also his blonde hair is kind of graying a little bit in the temples. Older fellow. Professional, but he's got that veteran sort of air about him. He's driving. It doesn't say where. And like I said, he doesn't ask any questions of the three of you. And it's a long drive. It's several hours in the middle of the night going into Monday morning. And as eventually, at some point, the van stops. They've got a van that's very similar to your van, by the way. And it stops basically somewhere near the water. You don't know where. It looks like an old makeshift fishing pier of some sort. There's a single boat there. He exits the van and asks you all to come with him and guides you on to this boat, this single boat that's moored at the pier. And this boat looks like, not unlike Morrison's boat. It's obviously not his boat, but about the same length. Something that's capable of going in the Gulf, something that's capable of going out, you know, into the ocean. But it's not a yacht, you know, and it's not a cruiser or a cabin liner. It does have a very small below deck area and kind of a central cabin with a roof over it and a back area for fishing. So he asks everyone aboard this boat, he pilots. You can basically stay with him. You can stay in the back, or you can go below. I'll leave it to the three of you. We've got some little journey ahead of us.
I think Dorothy would probably go below deck.
All right. What about the other two?
I think Fred would kind of look at where we're going and chain smoke cigarettes.
Yeah. So what you see, Fred, is basically the night sky, and you see the gulf before you, and the darkness of the bayous behind you. It's hard to tell where you are. You're probably somewhere near the border of Louisiana and Texas, as you remember it. But here, you don't see much signs of civilization. Distant lights down the shore in both directions, but nothing really strikes you. Nothing pays you much notice. And he's not giving any specific instructions. But if you want to rest, below decks is the place to do it.
Yeah, eventually he's going to finish his cigarettes. I think probably to himself that this would be the perfect place to get someone on sea and just kill them and dump the bodies.
Mm-hmm.
He's got 52 in criminology, he knows. But he trusts Morrison at least a little bit, so he's going to go below deck and rest.
Is Willow also below deck, or is she staying up top?
Yeah, so I would have tried to sleep in the van, and then just got on the boat, went straight, curl up in a corner of whatever's downstairs, and go to sleep.
Yeah. And downstairs, there's kind of these kind of curved couches down below that are almost twin beds, kind of two of them in the bow of the boat, kind of the front below boat area, and there's a little bit of a cabin down there below. So the three of you grab some sleep. All right. If anybody comes up, let me know. Otherwise, we'll jump ahead to when you wake up. So at some point, you wake. The movement of the boat, the noise of the engine. There's light now. You can see through the portholes. It's now morning light. And as you come up on top, this fellow is still piloting the boat along the coast. And by the position of the sun, it looks like you're heading west along the coast, back towards Texas, essentially. He just gives you a nod, and then probably the first thing he said to you in a long time says, I've got some coffee in a thermos, if that's what you want. It's a little bit cold. It's a little bit old, too. But, hey, in the field, you know, we do what we can.
Yeah, amen to that.
Thanks.
I don't got any grub, but the coffee is going to have to do us. I think we're about, I'd say, 2 hours out.
Sure. Yeah, Dorothy will have some coffee.
Yep.
Nope.
All right. So anybody else, anybody up top or who's down below? What's our positioning?
I'd probably be up front, but still like in the pilot area.
Yeah.
Just kind of under protection.
Yeah, there's two pilot seats and a roof over your head. The very back of the boat doesn't have a roof. You know, it's open to the sky. And the sky this morning, it's a morning sun. In November, it's overcast here in the Gulf. So it's not that hot, not that bright. The waves are choppy. And it's got, you know, that distinctive kind of grayish, bluish kind of color as you're drifting through and the white caps as the boat cuts through the water. You can see some distant boat traffic in all directions. You're on the Gulf. There is boat traffic. So we're not, you know, and Willow, of course, by looking around, you recognize you're outside of Texas. This is the Texas Gulf. They didn't take you anywhere unusual. He didn't take you towards, you know, Alabama or Mississippi or something. So as you get some coffee, anybody, any conversations, or shall we move forward?
I think Dorothy's going to just hang out down below deck. Mm-hmm. And she'll get some coffee, but then she just wants to be somewhere kind of dark, away from the sun. She's perfectly fine if other people want to come down there and hang out, but I think she just kind of wants to like sit in a corner somewhere and just sort of chill.
Right. So anybody else?
Yeah, no, I'm staying up top and just paying attention to where we're going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Fred tries to pay attention for some time, but eventually he just kind of falls asleep. He naps until we're there.
All right, so at some point along the way, this fellow looks over at you, Willow.
Mm-hmm.
Which one were you?
Keeson.
Yeah, I should have known. That makes sense. I'm Forrest.
She just kind of nods at him.
He says, I gotta say, y'all seem in pretty good shape.
Willow kind of looks at him and, I mean, I don't know what good shape looks like, but I guess we fake it well enough.
I hope you're not faking it. How do you feel?
Tired. I don't know. I feel like the job wasn't done, but I'm just here to follow orders.
Yeah, I mean, we follow orders. As long as the orders are complete, the job is done. But what did you miss?
So she's been around, like, military people a while, and he gives off the veteran vibe, right? Like, this is something he's been doing for a minute.
He's got that kind of calm veteran, like, combat vet veterans to vibe, as opposed to just a vet. So he's got that kind of guy who's... The lack of tension is very palpable in this guy.
Yeah. She'd say, it's only my second time out with this command, and I don't know what missions are usually like, but in the service so far, missions usually had a better conclusion. Like, I knew we got the guy or did the thing, and this one is not that cut and dried.
Gotcha. What do you think it was, the orders or the situation?
I think the situation was just too fucked.
How did you adapt to it?
I think I did better than the other two.
What do you think about those two?
Solid.
Both of them?
Especially the civilian. Most of them break down when it goes that bad. She made it through it.
I gotta say, bringing a civvy on to something like this, not kosher.
Not my favorite either. She good people, man.
Yeah, then that's, the old man's not happy about it.
Yeah. I wouldn't be either.
You keep an eye on her?
I try. She's fucking smarter than me, man.
Keep a good eye on her.
Yeah, I will.
I mean, you did, right?
Whole time I was there.
Now, she wasn't my responsibility, most likely. That was more Ricardo's job. He seems to think she's okay. We'll see. I had eyes on you more than anyone else. I gotta say, you gotta work it. You gotta watch it with that, whatever it is you're using. We all use something. We all got our crutches. I'm a little worried about you.
I've been going fast for like 12 years now. I don't know how to go slow. That's all it is.
I mean, usually the training helps us slow things down. And you're kind of new to this, right?
Yeah.
At some point, you gotta let the training do its job, and you can't be leaning on any crutches. Listen, I'm not one to talk. I got my own crutches. We all do. And people tell me the same shit my whole life. You know, I gotta stop drinking, right?
Leaning on this has just always been easier than leaning on people.
If you don't lean on your people, I mean, you're gonna let your people down.
Willow kind of straighten up at that. Say, I haven't yet.
Yeah, you lean on them, they lean on you. It's a team. It's we all are strong as our weakest link. We train together, we prepare together, we fail together.
I hope that's how this works out. So far, it's been. I mean, this was a CF. This wasn't an op. Not in the way I was trained.
Hmm.
Did you serve before you got wrapped up in this shit?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's how they found me.
I mean, the Air Force Academy was one of the most rigid sets of rules I've ever gone through. And this is far cry from that.
The Special Forces, they're a lot more rigid.
Yeah. The doc thing kind of kept me out of that. But some of those PJs are nuts.
Yeah, so, it was Fontaine that brought you in, right?
Yeah. Which kind of surprised me. I didn't know. Fuck, I still don't know if he trusts me.
He brought you in, so you're his responsibility. So he better trust you.
Good luck to him.
No, I mean, good luck to all of us. I'll put it this way. If any of us can't be trusted, that's a bad thing.
For some reason, I just don't want... As long as the old man's still good.
Oh, the old man?
As long as he still trusts me.
Oh, he doesn't blame you. He blames, what's that guy? The judge. That's the guy he blames. Yeah. It was his up, and he's responsible for the ARs, but we won't be for long. Just keep your nose clean.
She actually smiles at him, which is awkward as fuck. Says, appreciate the advice.
Yeah. You know, right? Keep your nose clean. Shit usually falls down, but sometimes it does go up. And in our case, in your case, let it go up.
I hear that.
All right. Good to meet you, Keeson.
You too.
Down below, Dorothy and Fred, I'm assuming you guys are asleep. Any conversation down there, or should we move forward?
I don't think Dorothy's sleeping anymore. Once she got up and got some coffee, she was up. She's just thinking, just kind of huddled by herself and going over the events of the last few days. Thinking about any possible loose ends. You know, thinking about the possibilities, like the things we couldn't control, right? Where's Acadia? You know, that kind of thing. But also, I think feeling simultaneously proud of the job they did and kind of terrified of what they had to do to get it done. And I think similar to how Willow is feeling about, like, this job really isn't done, I think Dorothy's feeling the same way, that if this is an outbreak, like, we didn't clean it up. You know, we may have, you know, quelled some of the bigger spots, but this is much older and much more widespread than I think anybody is aware of.
Does she want to have any conversations with Fred before you're debriefed? Before there's anything last conspiracies to have?
I think Fred would troop up at one point. Like, he's got his eyes closed. He's almost like he's got his cap on, like Indiana Jones, and his hat. But at one point he woke up, or maybe he wasn't really sleeping that much. And he says, I'll tell you this now. I let one go.
She, I think, doesn't quite put the pieces together for a second. And then when she does, she just looks at him with, like, huge eyes. Like, bewildered. And I don't think she says anything. I think she just looks at him.
He's not even looking. He's got his cap on his face. Like, he just kind of set it in between maybe, like, napping.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't add anything else.
Yeah, I think she'll, after probably what feels like a minute, she'll just say kind of quietly, like, okay. Okay.
All right, I'm going to cut forward. It's Monday afternoon, and the boat that you're in pulls into the Galveston Bay. Just on the outside of Houston, there's, of course, Galveston Bay and the Galveston Island, but there's a whole wide area of the bay, which, of course, there's a lot of boat traffic, but you head around the boat traffic into the east, the eastern end of the bay, part of the less developed area, the swampier, wetter parts. There's a lot of these kind of little sand atolls, small island strips, little secluded places along the way. And this boat happens to find a small wooden pier off this small little atoll with, you know, a bunch of wild trees growing in the sand. And at the end of the pier, there is a small shack, for lack of a better word. They're sitting on this island within view of kind of an old canal in the distance that heads deeper into eastern Texas, and of course a view of the greater bay to the west. Forrest, your driver, brings the boat up slowly and carefully and practiced, and brings it along the pier, slows it down, hops off the pier as the boat drifts in and with the ropes, ties it up, stops the whole thing, and maybe signals up to Willow to have, you know, put the brakes, you know, kill the engine and stop it. And he tightens up the ropes that ties you down and then establishes the boat, brings everybody out. When you're on the island, he basically just points down the pier. Actually, you're on the pier. He points down towards the island, towards the shack. Yeah, so the that cabin over there is it's open. We've got a couple supplies in there. Potable water, some packs of food, some sleeping bags, a basic cleaning gear, Enough for a few days, but I understand your handler is going to join you here, the judge fellow. So he asked me to leave you here, and this is what I'm going to do. I'm leaving the three of you here. Do you have any last questions?
Thanks for the ride, Forrest.
My pleasure.
Thanks for not killing us.
Hey, listen, if I would have thought you were vectors, I would have done my job. Just so we're clear, I don't see any evidence of that. I don't go shooting my people for no good reason. It's just not him. That's not me.
Dorothy nods.
I don't think it's any of us. So listen, as long as the three of you are not infected, not showing symptoms, you're going to be fine. We got some procedures we got to do. Your handler's got to clear you. That's his gig. My job is to make sure that you got here in one piece and that you didn't bolt. And you didn't go crazy. As far as I'm concerned, you three are A-OK in my book. I'll see you again. Hey, maybe we'll work together sometime in the future, assuming you guys get cleared. But, hey, listen, you got good marks. Don't sweat it.
Forrest, who are you? You working with the Bureau or the...
With the Navy.
All right, well... Imagine we might see each other, or maybe not.
You know how this goes.
Mm-hmm. He nods.
All right.
I'm already headed up to the cabin.
Good luck. All right, so he basically does the process of untying the ropes, getting himself unmoored, coming back up, asks maybe for Will for a little shove, push the boat away, and he starts the engine up and pulls the boat away and cruises out back into the bay. So the three of you, when you go to this cabin, and there's a cabin, and there's a strand of thin trees, a line of trees along this thin, like pencil-shaped island, and there's a sandbar on both sides, and that's about it. And inside, it's a one bedroom, one bath. There's a kitchen living room combo in the front, so you got a kitchen living room, a bath in the corner, a single bedroom in the corner. It's very sparsely furnished. There's like a stove, a wood burning stove in the middle, but it's like for oil, like you burn oil in this thing, and there's no oil in it. So, but thankfully it's not that cold. You know, it's still mid-November, but here in the South and in Texas, the weather is not hitchy yet. It's not that cold yet. There is in the kitchen, there are some rations, more military style rations, and a bunch of bottles of basically purified water. You know, like plastic jugs of purified water all sitting on this table. Probably an amount for 5 to 7 days. If you ration it, you know, a whole week. Otherwise, a good 5 days or so. Now, there's a couple of lanterns in here, as opposed to like electrical lights. There's no electricity. So a couple of lanterns sitting up. And that is about it. It is sparse as hell. And what are the three you want to do, or should we cut forward in time?
I think at some point, maybe once we get settled a bit, Dorothy does want to talk to the others.
Go for it.
Yeah, so maybe we're sitting in the kitchen or sitting outside or something, and she says, I guess to Fred mostly, since he's been through this before, more. So you said back there this op was not standard, right?
No, it wasn't. We don't usually have procedures, and that was, most of them, and that's why I do this. They're kind of like my day job. They're investigations. Sometimes it's about finding people and silencing them, or finding something that doesn't belong, or just taking something, but this was just mostly an execution.
Yeah. And you've never run into anything that was, that attacked the mind like this?
Well, not exactly. I've seen like some kind of color that doesn't exist and saps you away, but that wasn't the same.
What about you, Willow? Have you ever, I mean, obviously not this, but like, is there any sense of familiarity to what happened here?
Other than it defying logic, not really. I'm kind of getting the impression that that's what the fuck we signed up for.
Yeah, that does seem to be the common thread.
Can I ask you a question, Dorothy? And Willow, you let me know what you think about this, because there's no other way I can think of this. The judge. Does he have a grudge against the old man, your dad? Because this isn't something we send friendlies on.
So, after the whole situation with the cult, my dad came to see me. It was actually just a month ago or so. And we had a conversation about some of the stuff that went down. Mostly it was him telling me to stay out of it.
Wait, Willow, would I interrupt you? Your dad's the old man? Like the one Forrest was just talking about?
I guess so. Yeah.
Who the fuck is your dad?
His name is Fairfield. Reginald Fairfield.
Which would mean nothing to Willow, right? Like, there's no reason that name should mean anything.
He used to be a U.S. Army general, major general, but I think sometime in the late 60s, maybe 1970, he retired, so to speak. Since then, he's kind of been doing his own thing, but I think he never really stopped doing this. I don't think he ever really retired from this boys club that you guys seem to be a part of.
I don't think it's a boys club, but...
You don't think so?
I mean, it feels like a black op to me. I mean, it feels like a military black op.
Well, okay, sure.
It's very ad hoc. There's no real structure to it.
Well, there seems to be some kind of structure to it. It seems like, I don't know, Morrison works for my dad or something. Because when he came to talk to me, I told him about George. Because George is the one who brought me into this. You know, he was the one who approached me and asked me to help with different things, academic things. And I didn't really use his name when I was telling my dad about this, but he seemed to think I was talking about Morrison. And he seemed to have some pretty nasty things to say about the judge.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that means he has a grudge against Judge Morrison or the other way around, but when we were briefed at the beginning of this, I definitely got the impression that Morrison doesn't really care what my dad thinks and was going against direct orders. It sounded then like he genuinely believed putting me in this was a good idea.
Hmm.
But after what we experienced, I don't think it was a good call. And he said it was because of my heart, my conscience, and my ability to, you know, use some kind of care with deciding the fates of these people. And after what we went through, you know, and Dorothy kind of looks at Willow at this point, and she's like, it really wasn't up to me. It was, we had rules, we had protocols that we needed to follow. Doesn't matter what somebody with a conscience thinks, anybody. What mattered was, and then she looks back at Fred, getting the job done, taking care of it. And I don't believe that Morrison put me into this because he thought that would help get the job done. So maybe he does have some kind of issue and he was getting back at my dad by putting me in this. I don't really know.
Hmm.
I mean, more people would be dead if I was in charge. So you could feel good about that. So I don't know that I would give yourself more credit for the not being the right person.
Should I feel good about that? Wouldn't it be safer if more people were dead?
Do we need to run through the trolley problem? You tell me on that one. Mumbles something about drawing on napkins and shit.
We fade out. And then Tuesday morning, November 23rd,
at some point, maybe 11, maybe just as the sun is just getting close to noon, a boat begins to approach your little makeshift island, your little island getaway. A boat that some of you recognize.
I'd like to be fishing on the dock.
And you see it kind of come over to the dock and pull in slowly and slow down and pull up beside. And Judge Jacob Morrison pulls out, jumps out, moors his boat, ties it down, turns it off, the old bird and roll. Gets in the back and begins unloading several boxes onto the dock. And assuming no one approaches him, he manages to pile these up, like three boxes up.
No, I'll go down and help him.
There we go. All right, well, good girl, Willow.
Yeah, same. Fred asks if there's any beer in there.
I got Mr. Fontaine. Yeah, I got some ice chest.
Great.
Yeah, back in the boat.
Sure.
Good. Yeah, thanks y'all for helping me. Let's move on. It's good to see y'all. Frankly, I'm glad to see y'all, that you are all here, that you're all alive.
I think Dorothy would come up as well.
Yeah. So you kind of carry these boxes, and it looks like he's brought food, is what it basically brought. You know, he's brought some boxes of fresh food, and, you know, he's got a 12-pack of beer, which was cold in the ice chest. You'd probably bring the whole ice chest with you, is what you'd want to do.
Yep.
Given the lack of refrigeration that you have inside your cabin. So he brings it all in. Well, it's almost Thanksgiving, and I got a sense I may have to leave you all here for a few more days. So I bought brisket. Closest thing I got to turkey, probably much better. I think you might agree with me. I got some yams. I got some baked beans. I got some other, you know, staples, starches. We got some bread rolls in here. What else I bring here? Chips. I love chips. 12-pack. I don't know, some junk food. I figure you might enjoy that. And a little bit of dressing and stuff in there. I like dressing, so thought you might appreciate. Anyhow, here's the deal, folk. I'm supposed to clear each and every one of you, and I got to ask a few questions. It's going to take a little bit of time. I also got to make sure that we got no signs, no observable signs of, you know, any kind of contamination. So we're going to be doing this thing a little bit, maybe a little this afternoon, and a little bit more tomorrow. And as long as everything is good and I kind of give the all clear, I think in a couple of days, I get you all off this island. We get ourselves right back to that regular life that y'all been missing so much. So if you're hungry, I'm sure you are.
Yep.
Eat up. And I gotta start things off with Miss Dorothy. So whenever you're ready, Dorothy, you and I are going to take a walk.
Gesturing to the food, she says, thank you, Dutch. That was very thoughtful. Yeah. But sure, let's talk.
It's the least I can do. I mean that. I mean, I sure could have done a hell of a lot more. But I'm sorry. Enjoy your food. Enjoy your food. And take your time, folk. We got some time to kill.
Willow is eating brisket.
Yep.
Excellent.
Fred is fucking destroying these chips.
Yeah. Probably have some white bread in there as well. You know, some baked yams. And, you know, we got a lot of comfort food, a lot of more holiday food, a lot of Texas food mixed all together here. Mm. And it kept us as warm as he can keep it in those takeout boxes that he's brought in.
Yeah. If we're all sitting around eating, I think this is the first time in a few days that you guys see, like, Dorothy's actually, like, eating a decent amount of food. Like, she's really going for it.
So yeah, after all the consuming of food takes place and people relax a bit and have a few drinks, at some point we're going to cut ahead. So Morrison and Dorothy, he walks with you kind of along the sandbar, you know, on the edge of this kind of thin stretch of trees on this elongated kind of bar that we have out here in the bay. And as it's going along, there's kind of a lot of awkward pauses and some small talk.
Yeah, well, I think before he jumps into it, I think, you know, as we're kind of alone out by the sandbar, you know, more of a secluded area, she kind of chuckles and says, you're not going to, like, shoot me and kick me in the water, are you?
I suppose this would be a good spot as any. It's, you know, as long as nobody saw anything, I'd have to, of course, weight you down. You'd just be floating in the bay. That probably wouldn't serve any of our purposes, right?
I am pretty good at floating.
Yeah, I think I'd much rather, maybe I could bury you somewhere in the sand, assuming, of course, that the next rainstorm we have don't just wash the sand away and your body come out. Yeah, it don't work very well here, Dorothy. these contingencies don't work for me. I'd much rather take you out on my boat if I was going to do something like that. Right?
All right, remind me not to get on your boat.
Yeah, that's a good safety tip. Unless you like fishing.
I've never been.
You never been fishing?
No. Mm-mm. I grew up in the woods. There was a pond, but never really...
Hey, that ain't fishing.
Never really went fishing.
That's sitting. Anyhow, deep sea fishing and a little more sporting. Bigger catches. Further down the Gulf, we get some swordfish.
Ooh, interesting.
Anyhow, I'm wasting time here. I got some stuff I gotta ask you, right?
Shoot.
Just so we're clear, I gotta ask these questions. So, obviously, we're going to spend a little bit of time back in the cabin later on. I got to do like a full-on recorded interview. I'm going to need you to kind of, you know, give me the whole rundown on tape. But before I do that, between the two of us, I got to know, is there anyone that you know that was exposed that y'all didn't eliminate?
So her eyes go up into her head as she's like... thinking and remembering and just kind of going through the Rolodex of events and people that she talked to, as Taylor does the same. After a minute, she says, no, I don't think so. No one that I can remember. The only thing that comes to mind is one of the people. We didn't get like absolute confirmation that she died. We know that there was a dead body. We don't know for sure if it was her, but we couldn't find her afterwards, and it was where she would have been. Also, it sounds like the remains were pretty badly damaged with fire. So
okay, I'm gonna cut you off right there, because I'm gonna kind of tell you like that that answer ain't gonna cut it.
Okay.
As far as I know, there was at least several hundred high school children who were exposed. Am I right?
Oh.
And y'all didn't eliminate those kids, right?
Right.
So the answer would be, yeah, there's the whole fucking 200 children we didn't kill, Mr. Morrison. Correct?
Yeah.
And that's fine. I'm not saying that. That's not the wrong answer. That could be the right answer. But when I prepare you for this recording we got to do, details like that matter. So just keep it at 100 with me here. Anybody who might have possibly witnessed this play is a possible exposure. You know the protocols, I'm sure, better than I do at this point. That there ain't no rule that you gotta kill every single person that's exposed. Am I right?
Right.
So just, we gotta roll with that. Go with that. Lean into that. It's okay. You following the rules, right?
Yeah.
Anybody that was possibly exposed, when we do our recording, you just document that. And I'm going to ask you, of course, as well, what the reason was. Can you give me a good reason why they still living?
Well, I guess I wasn't thinking about the people who saw the play, because it sounded like there was a commotion before anything happened, but that is really the only instance I could think of that we know for sure of anybody who witnessed anything and is still around.
Yeah, I want you to make sure to broaden your imaginations. It could be like janitors who saw a practice. It could be a parent who came and witnessed their child reading the lines. It could be a neighbor. It could be a service employee who just happened to deliver food at the time a rehearsal was... The number of possible exposures we're talking about here could be very, very large now.
Okay, well, Morrison, do you want me to list every single person that could have ever come in contact with any of the people who were involved in this?
Everyone that you're aware of.
Because I can't.
Right. Everyone that you're aware of.
Okay.
That's what I'm saying. So when I do the interview and I ask you this question, that's why I'm talking to you right now off the record. Every single person that you're aware of that possibly was exposed, we gotta document that shit. Understood?
The only people that I'm aware of for sure are whoever was in the auditorium.
All right. Do we have a list?
No.
All right. That's fine. You all did the best you could. I can get that list. Our people can watch these people. If something happens, we'll deal with it. Don't be down on yourself. Now, this is the first time I sent you in the field like this, Dorothy. I ain't expecting you to bat 100 on me, all right? Batting 1,000, whatever. 333 is fine. That's a winning batting percentage. You understand what I'm saying? Maybe you don't.
No.
Yeah, sorry, it's a baseball analogy, but listen, just that's all I'm saying. When we document this thing later on, just let me know. Just for the record, that's all I'm saying. So we're good. All right, I got a few other questions that I want to talk to you now, off the record. Dorothy, is there anyone on your team that you believe is still showing any signs of infection?
No. She answers that pretty quickly.
All right. I got you. So you do feel like it's safe for me to let all three of y'all come back into the regular world?
Well, I wanted to ask you about that. Because when we last spoke on the phone, yesterday when we spoke on the phone, you said that there has never been a situation where somebody was exposed to this stuff and didn't become fucked up down the road.
I'm gonna expound upon that because I know that's pretty frightening, right?
Yeah.
As far as we're aware of, yeah. Yeah, that's true.
So what about the other people who you guys sent in to clean these kinds of things up? The other teams like us?
Yeah.
How'd they fare?
We learned a lot of hard lessons back in the 50s and the 60s. Thankfully, I don't think we did any of these protocols in the 70s. Might have been one I wasn't aware of last decade. Thankfully, I don't know about that. In the early on, we made a lot of mistakes, which we are overcorrected on. So I'll put it this way. Early agents did not know what to expect, had no rules to follow, and got themselves into shit. And they didn't make it, Dorothy. They went insane. Pretty much across the board. And we later on, when we had teams watching them, our shadow teams had a hard time staying sane as well. They got themselves too involved, right? We learned some lessons since then. We've been backing away. We've been getting less involved. We've been keeping a little more hands off. We've been trusting our primary teams to do their job. I think this has been, as far as I can tell, but a damn successful operation from our perspective. Y'all in one piece? Ain't none of you blathering on about masks? Or going to fucking Carcosa? Am I right?
Don't say that word.
It's on the list. You and I both know that.
You said you didn't know it was on the list.
Let's just put it this way. I like to know what's happening in my operations.
Well, take some advice. Don't get too involved in this kind of thing.
I understand. But as far as I can tell...
The less you know, the better.
I don't see you spouting lines at me and talking about taking your faces off or...
Jesus.
Or having people with masks coming to shoot you. So, thus far, I think we are in good shape. I gotta talk to the other two. But you're telling me those two, they're fine?
She looks back over at the cabin and looks kind of contemplative. Now, not answering so quickly. But I think she says, yeah, I think they're both good.
All right, I got two more things I gotta ask you. The first one, I think it's pretty obvious. I know you're going to respond, but I got to ask you anyway. If it turns out I'm wrong or you're wrong about those two, maybe we won't know this for months, years. Turns out one of those two becomes a vector. Do you know what to do about it?
Yes, sir.
Now, even if I clear y'all, and I hope I can do that, and that's my intention here, all right? We all still got to be watching on this thing. I don't know how long the time frame is. I don't know if there's a half-life, right? Who knows? But if in the future something happens, you got to report that. I'm sure you know that. I don't have to tell you that. So I just got one more question for you. Is there anything you're not telling me, Dorothy?
No.
All right, we're going to be good then. All right. I'm going to talk to the others briefly, have the same conversation like we've been having here, and then we'll get to all the nitty-gritty boring shit where we got to record this thing, do our documentation, do our AARs, sit tight. The boring shit will be over, and then we'll go back to that good life you got. You'll be free again.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Dorothy.
I think she just turns and walks back to the cabin.
All right, good. He walks back as well, so. All right, we got to cut ahead. So, Fred, you and Morrison are out talking. You're probably smoking a cigarette, I presume, right?
Yes.
All right. I think Morrison will ask you for one. And so he'll share a cigarette with you.
Sure.
But he doesn't seem like a practice smoker. He tries it a little bit, kind of clears his throat a bit, tries a little bit more. Doesn't seem to be the most satisfying experience for him, but he partakes a little. All right.
Yep.
Makes a little small talk, and then basically, Fred, my boy, I'm happy to see that you're all right.
Yeah, likewise, I guess.
How you doing?
The end of that thing, it was rough, Morrison. I'm not going to tell you lies here.
I understand. I asked you and Will to do some pretty distasteful things.
Yep.
Are you okay with that?
Not sure. I think I will be, but you know, these things we want to protect people from it. And when the line between being preyed upon by whatever fucking thing that was and being like a walking vector, we don't know how that works. So especially for children, my main reflex is going to try to help him out, right?
Right. I'll probably ask you this on the record, but I just want to know from, you know, man to man. Did I make the right call with Dorothy?
He thinks for long seconds. Takes a long drag of his cigarette. Well, if the procedures didn't exist and you would have based the whole thing on her own morality, yeah. But these procedures being what they are, no.
Yeah, so I was asking Miss Dorothy to do something that was morally distasteful to her.
Yep.
How'd she handle that?
Better than I expected. I think by now she's getting hardened, which is good for her, but at the same time, there's some bits and pieces that are going to be left behind.
I guess we'll see. I got to ask you this question as well. Is there those two? Dorothy, of course, she's going to have the most exposure of anybody on your team. And Willow, I don't know how much she saw, but given what you've seen about them too, are either of them currently showing any signs of infection?
Well, if I'm going with the basis of these children we saw at Elysian Wells, it's not even the same fucking ballpark, no.
All right. Later on, we'll be doing some recording, taking some detailed statements. Something that's going to help my case and your case as well. Just make sure that you explain the symptoms as you have seen them, so we can distinguish between those who are truly infected and those who are not. I gotta have at least some sort of baseline where I can demonstrate, right? Who is sane and who is not sane. So whatever details you can give me as to the crazy shit they were doing, lay that on thick. Understood?
Yep.
All right, do you feel like it's safe that I let the three of you return? What do you think about that?
I think so. But, back-to-back operations like these, they're starting to weigh on me.
I got no control over that, mind you. I got a feeling I may not be calling on you for a little while. It ain't got nothing to do with you.
Oh, I have a feeling I know what it has to do with.
Yeah, I know. You know, we in the politics business sometimes. You did a good job. I'll deal with my own shit, right? I got to ask a couple more things, though. If something happens in the future, you see something with Willow or Miss Dorothy that reminds you of this case or brings back all the symptoms, right, of someone who's infected, you know what to do, right, Fred?
Yep.
It ain't pretty. I told the same thing to Dorothy. Like, we don't know what the half-life of this thing is. We don't know when you're truly in the clear. Where are we going to find out?
Hopefully we don't. And everything's good.
All right. Last question I got for you. And I'm going to talk to Miss Willow a bit as well. Is there anything you haven't told me, Fred? That maybe you need to tell me?
He fakes, like, thinking about something, and he says, "No, as far as I'm concerned, what we did the entire way through was pretty much kosher, and honestly, unless you pull a Bureau special of, you know, covering operations and murders and putting a fucking ungodly amount of resources on surveilling an entire school, I think we did pretty good, pretty all right."
Yeah, that's good to hear. That's good. Listen, I ain't the sort that believes killing a bunch of children who saw a high school play is a right call. That,
yeah, it is. It is.
I can't make that call. I can't make that call, Fred. I get the sense you can't either.
No, I can't.
All right. Just make sure when we do our record that you just I need you just to justify it for me. For the record, so we all clear.
Sure. I mean, children are already pretty weird baseline, so...
Yeah.
We're not gonna go shooting kids that are acting a bit funky and funnily, right?
I gotta tell you, I feel almost like there's a higher standard, right? I need a little bit more than reasonable doubt for this. If you know what I mean.
Yeah, I do.
All right, Fred. I'm sorry, Fred.
I mean, if it wasn't us, it was other people. Are you gonna read Dorothy in? Is she like a full on agent now?
I don't know. I'll put it this way. It ain't my call.
Well, whoever's call it is to make, they better hurry the fuck up to make it.
Hell, she knows as much as Willow does.
Yeah.
But like I said, it ain't my call, so...
Okay.
We'll find out. All right, thank you, Fred.
Yeah. You don't like the Newports, huh?
It's... I smoked something a little different back in my day. These are fine. They're all right. It's been a while. Dude,
you seem more like a cigar guy to me.
Yeah. That's more what I've been... trying these days. That is right.
All right. Well, I'm sure we'll talk later.
That we will. Thank you, Fred. So Willow, you and Morrison are talking probably like out on the dock or on the pier for a little bit.
All right.
And he doesn't make a lot of as much small talk with you. Maybe he's a little more professional. Willow, I'm not quite sure what to say, but I want to at least talk to you before we do any kind of formal. Official, like, record. Later on, I'm going to be doing, like, a tape-recorded interview from each of y'all, getting the full story, if you understand my drift. But I want to get a couple things out first. How's it working with this team? What do you think?
Pretty good so far. Like,
I mean, you can be honest with me. Like, how bad was it?
I mean, the op wasn't great, so it wasn't like it was... a spectacular experience, but the team did a good job. They did their roles.
What do you think about those two? Are either of those two infected in your opinion?
She hesitates for a second because she's still kind of at war with the medical versus the supernatural thing, and says, "In the context you're asking it, no."
There's something that concerns you. Am I right?
You're not going to have the answers I want.
What kind of answers are you looking for?
I don't know. Has anybody studied this phenomenon from a scientific or medical perspective? Have any immunologists looked at it yet?
I see. Yeah, from a medical perspective, I don't believe we have. And hell, who knows? Maybe you'll be the first one to do a little bit of more research on this for us. I mean, as you can probably tell...
No, sir, I'm good.
Understood. That's a good answer. That is a good answer. You see, Miss Willow, I get the sense from what I've heard thus far, you've been on this, on keeping this thing away from yourself. Am I right? You've been distancing yourself from exposure as best as possible.
Yeah, I tried to maintain as much distance as I could from all of it.
That's good. Because from what we've seen, this stuff, it affects the brain. It affects the mind. It's that's how it spread. I can't explain it any better than that.
I can pretty much verify that the actions of the late-term subjects were, if their brains weren't modified, I'm sure you could physically prove that with investigation. Don't know that you should.
Right, right.
But somebody could cut them open and find out.
So when I do take an official formal statement from you, I wanted you to, if you do me the favor, make sure to give as much details about what exposure looks like so that we can identify it in the future, right?
All right. I can do that.
You feel comfortable with these two, with Mr. Fontaine and with Miss Dorothy Somerset?
In what way?
You think I should let him go back home?
Yeah. Not anything close to what we just witnessed.
Right there, you don't think they're gonna spread this thing, right?
No.
Okay. That's good to hear. That's what I wanted to hear. I appreciate that. So with that being said, I guess it don't have to be said. I mean, if it turns out that later on one of them starts showing signs of infection, you know what to do, right?
So now she actually kind of like full on makes eye contact and looks at him and goes, "Really, sir?
What do you think? What would you do?
What was the body count in the woods, sir?
I don't have that information yet. I'm going to have to ask you to give me your best estimate. Then I'm going to get our statement from the shadow team as well. And we're going to compare some notes to make sure the count lines up.
So she would say, this is not an estimate. It's 9.
Understood. Understood. If it turns out that Mr. Fontaine or Miss Somerset becomes like those people that you had to eliminate, we're going to raise that body count?
Yes, sir.
Only if necessary. And I hope to God it ain't necessary. So, last thing I got to just say is this. Is there anything else that you think maybe you should be telling me?
No, sir.
All right. You want a beer?
No, I'm good. Try to stay off the substances.
Hey, you got a couple days here, Willow. You know, you can enjoy yourself. Take some downtime. It wouldn't hurt.
Well, if you ever let me off this damn island, I'm going to go disappear in the woods for a couple of weeks.
If that's what you need, I am all in favor. So, here, let's get back. Let's get back to it.
Sir.
So, long story short, kind of wrap things up here. There is a day or so of detailed interviews, recorded interviews, statements about, and the statements are done separately. Each of you separately giving a statement, like one person and Morrison in the cabin with the tape recorder, while the other two are off somewhere else on the island. And then we change it around and rotate and take breaks, and he changes tapes. So we have a long series of scenes where he does the statements, he does his reviews. During that period of time, and there's the sun goes down and the sun comes up, another day, we're into Tuesday, we're into Wednesday. Nobody goes insane, goes crazy. Nobody becomes a vector. Nothing crazy happens. He leaves the island at some point, on Wednesday. And for a time, you're alone. You spend Thanksgiving alone on the island with the leftovers, the cold leftovers of the meal. He probably would have left you a little extra food as well. I'm not going to starve out there. Friday, you're alone. And finally, late night Saturday, at the end of this Thanksgiving week, you see Morrison's boat. As the sun's going down in the distance, you see the boat petering over, arrive at the dock. And we kind of have like a wide shot of the three of you getting on the boat, and we end it there.
They tell me all your stories, all the little worries. Tell me what the world needs, what to say, who to please, where my loyalties should lie. They tell me what you're building, far too many stories high, the stories high. And tell me where will we be when it comes down from the sky, all scattered and far wide. And the rising tide, far and wide. What did it cost to get? The travel, the trials, and the battles.